folks. Welcome back to today's MWCYR podcast. Week 4, I believe, we're going into the season.
That is correct.
As always, that is correct. That's Matt Kennerly there. I'm Jeremy Moss, and conference play is creeping up on us. We got some conference games this week.
Yeah, we got more. You know, we had one last week. It was a very interesting game. This week's slate promises to have a little bit of fireworks, I think.
That's right. Check us out, MWCYR.com, Facebook. We're trying on Facebook, folks. We need your help. Come to our Facebook page, MWCYR. Same thing on Twitter if you want some, rational takes on Josh Allen. I think that's fair to say. Bowl predictions, whatever. Quarterback rankings, if people like to yell at me of where I have the combo of Cozart and Rippin Ranked, come yell at me. But most importantly, it's week 4. Right?
Yes, it is.
I don't know. I was trying to say something dramatic, but I'm like, I got nothing.
That's always the most important thing. Is that there's more football on the horizon.
There's more football, but fewer games, which means this show probably should not be 95 minutes long. Right?
That's, yeah, you would hope, yeah.
Hope's the optimal word there.
We're gonna deep dive into Utah State, San Jose State at some point, I'm sure.
No, I do have some news about that game. The Mercury News actually had somebody write 2 articles on the Spartans this week.
Oh, 2, so, huh?
And I did notice former Spartans beat writer Jimmy Durkin, who now does a million things, he's now with The Athletic doing stuff there, so good for him. But he's only doing, like, NFL and Giants and A stuff, so it's like, okay, cool, but still. Give us Spartans talk. If you want us to give you money, give us Spartans talk, right? At least a little bit, you would think.
Or you can donate to our Patreon instead.
Boom.
And help us continue giving you Spartans fans, maybe, you know, those outside of San Jose even, help us give you more coverage of San Jose State.
Yeah, we got Anna there. We got Ryan. Anna goes to every home game, so we'll be at the game this weekend when they take on Utah State. So give her a follow at Twitter. Was it Anna Kiu? K-I-E-U? Is that correct, I think?
That is correct.
I didn't know if there's an underscore in there. That's why I was hesitant to continue with that. Really quick, did you happen to glance over my Josh Allen piece at all? Did you happen to peruse that?
I did.
What'd you think? Was it too much? Not enough?
I think it's fair because, you know, the players never bring draft hype upon themselves. It always comes from somewhere. And, you know, like, I mean, you and I on some level are kind of like pundits as well. But, you know, maybe we should have taken a broader view of the kind of situation he was stepping into this year before we got carried away with ourselves and had to backtrack and maybe say, okay, you know, maybe he needs more time to see what he can actually do this year. You know, he hasn't looked good through 3 weeks. Josh Allen hasn't. But there's still a long way to go. And he still has the tools. Those haven't gone anywhere. And it's going to be, you know, kind of interesting to see how it shakes out going forward.
I just find it surprising that, yes, I wrote about the piece and everything about, oh, he didn't want the hype. But then again, I still, like, it's like the NBA. There's always the bingo or drinking game for the draft about how many times will Andy Katz or whoever, Charles Barkley or Kenny Smith, say upside throughout the draft. That's the big thing about NBA. Oh, this kid's 18 or 19, one-and-done player from Kentucky, UNLV, Cal, USC, wherever, upside. People are still enamored just because he's a big guy and he can make some throws and is reasonably mobile and he plays in a pro-style offense. I was shocked last year when the hype came out, and I'm still shocked now that people like Matt Miller, because I found his original tweet from last year saying he's a top 3 guy before he even declared, and then he still has Allen as a number 2 quarterback overall and number 5 in his overall rankings, I believe it is.
I believe he said it was number 3.
I don't understand why he's... Okay, yeah, there it is. I was looking through. Number 3. I just don't see, like... I know teams are quarterback hungry in the NFL, and I'm not to say to know what Allen can do at college to the NFL. And I mentioned a million times in the offseason, be careful. They may not make a bowl game. They lose all these receivers. They lose all these guys to the NFL. Like, Chase Roulier is a key contributor for the Redskins offensive line. Brian Hill's in the NFL. Gentry's with the Bears. And the Bears are down or injuries that help him get a spot. But even when those players were there, he still wasn't completing all these passes. So my takeaway, main thing was, is like, first off, don't crush him just because he's playing poorly, because his perceived expectation is a top five player in the draft. But also, look at what he's doing. He's not playing well. And when he plays against teams with decent defenses, he doesn't play well at all. And I don't see how NFL scouts or GMs are going to go back and look at their Oregon tape. Yes, people DM'd me or messaged me on Twitter, oh, they went to the running game because they were down big. Well, first of all, they don't have a running game. And second of all, going 9 of 24 for 64 yards against Oregon defense that let Nebraska score 35 on him. I'm just not sold that he's that good of a quarterback, that he should be a top five pick, but teams reach. And so, I don't know. I just wanted to talk about that for a second because we have fewer games, so.
I mean, what I would say about it is that, yeah, the first three games didn't look pretty, but he's still got nine more to go. And when you really think about it, can you think of another quarterback in the group of five that has the same just raw arm strength that he does?
Brent Stockstill, Middle Tennessee State, Logan Woodside, perhaps at Toledo. Those are,
I mean, I've seen those guys play a few times. I don't know that that's the case. Like, I've he's not draft eligible for another couple of years. I've saw Armani Rogers make a couple of throws like Josh Allen. But I feel like among his closest contemporaries, you know, the raw tools still haven't gone anywhere. And if you've watched him closely, like, you can still see him trying to make plays. Like, he still has the mobility. He still has the arm strength. It's just a matter of, you know, finding more discipline, and maybe that will come as a result of, you know, an offensive line that, you know, I think we've neglected to mention it in past recaps and previews, but, you know, they skew very young along that offensive line. And maybe that's part of a problem that, you know, he didn't always have last year. To me, I think that might be the bigger concern, and also the lack of a running game that has really put a lot more on his shoulders than I think a lot of Cowboys fans anticipated. I think his wide receivers are fine. Like, I think that, you know, James Price, once he's healthy, will be pretty good. And we know that Austin Conway can make plays down the field. But, you know, I think we know enough about Josh Allen to know that he's not the kind of quarterback that can do it all by himself, at least not at this point.
Maybe that's what we're getting at, because I talked with James Motel of Draft Breakdown, and I think he does USA Draft Wire. I chatted with him during a preseason show, like, here's some draft stuff. Because I brought up the question, I'm like, because if you're good, NFL finds you. It doesn't matter. If you're a JUCO, D3, they're picking up guys who played American football in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to make this a draft show, but this is kind of the final point here. If you're an offensive lineman, you can be on a team that's 0-12 but be a first-round pick or a second-round pick or be drafted at all. If you're a running back that on a bad team, basically, if you're a player that's on a bad team but you play well, you'll be found. However, my kind of, not to go against the grain a little bit, but if you're on a bad team and you're a quarterback, I think that says more about the player than does the team itself, and probably should hurt your draft stock if you can't, again, not 9 of 24 versus Oregon. How, if you're a good quarterback, you got to make plays, and he's not making plays.
Well, I would say give it time.
But he's going to play against lesser competition. That's the thing. Yeah, he could light up New Mexico, UNLV, Hawaii, Air Force's defense, New Mexico, or I already said them, but possibly Boise State will be a tough challenge. He'll light up Utah State. I don't care if he goes 24-30 for 350 and three touchdowns versus Utah State. I want to see what he does against San Diego State or Iowa or Boise State. Am I being too hard on him to actually be a decent quarterback? Because right now he's not good, at least when you look at his numbers. And numbers are a big deal with quarterback. I know. Am I being too hard, you think, on him, of saying he shouldn't be considered this good?
I mean, I think we've talked about it a little bit, and I think I would, you know, if I had to answer yes or no, I would probably say yes, because you're talking about an offense as a whole that right now ranks 124th in the country in yards per play. So it's not so Josh Allen is not the only one that's had an incredibly disappointing September so far.
And I get that. I don't know. I'm just looking at Todd real quick. We'll wrap on. Todd McShay has his recent, as of this morning, Wednesday morning, his top 32 players overall. He has Josh Allen number two behind only Sam Darnold. And it's your points exactly, which people say his arm strength, he can make most throws, and he's 6'5", 230. That's all. That's a lot. Like, you got to – Jamarcus Russell was a big arm and a big quarterback. He flamed out in, like, 2 years in the NFL.
I think that, A, you know, in college, I believe Jamarcus Russell was more accurate than Josh Allen was. But
yes, he was.
I think what I want to see is, you know, you saw a similar kind of split between Allen's production and non-conference play versus conference play last year. And that same split was also evident in the offense as a whole between non-conference play and conference play. So we could talk about this more when we start talking about the Hawaii game coming up this week. Last year, they averaged about 6.3 yards a play in conference play. I think if I'm a believer in Josh Allen, I want to see that number go up going forward. But we'll talk more about that when we get into the previews.
All right, let's do that now. But also, if you want to check out the piece, it's at mwcwire.com. I think I'm reasonably fair. But my main point in the article was that don't blame him because he's not playing up to a top five draft pick because Wyoming's not doing great and he's not doing great either. But let's do this. Since we have a Friday game, should we just go? Let's just jump into that Hawaii game since we're already talking Josh Allen and Wyoming. Kind of go a little not in order what we normally do.
Yeah, why not?
All right, Hawaii goes to Wyoming. It's a 8:15 a local time, ESPN2. Hey, bonus money for everybody. And really quick, since I always get it wrong, what's the name of the trophy? Because I can never remember.
It is the Peniolo Trophy.
The Hawaiian Cowboy Trophy, right?
Yes.
I still say that's the best trophy, that and John Bridger's, or is it Jim Bridger's rifle when Utah State plays Wyoming. So whenever it's a firearm, I know you're going to say the cannon. You got the cannon, of course.
I was going to say, let's not badmouth the cannon now.
I'm just saying a rifle, that's pretty cool. But the Hawaiian Cowboys is great too. So it's ESPN2. Wyoming's a 6-point favorite. I don't know about that, man. I like Hawaii in this matchup. Hawaii has a complete offense, a decent defense, but then again, this will be the probably outside of Gardner Webb, a defense that Josh Allen probably should have some success against.
So, where do you think is the biggest mismatch in this game? Let's start with that.
I would say that's a good question. You put it in my spot like that. Let's see. Well, it's going to be Wyoming's. Well, Wyoming's offense is good too. You got some good matchup. Like, you got John Ursura maybe going up against Andrew Wingard in this game. You have Logan Wilson going to go up against, like, the running attack for Hawaii. I would say it would be something with Hawaii's defense versus Wyoming's offense. That has to be, because the other flip side of the ball, Hawaii's offense versus Wyoming's defense, is pretty comparable, I would say. So I'd go Hawaii's running game versus Wyoming's running game on offense, maybe?
I mean, that's an interesting point.
You can say wrong if you want.
No, I'm not going to say it's wrong.
I'm just saying their running game is so terrible, any defense would be a mismatch against Wyoming's running attack until further notice.
I mean, because like I just talked about, you know, Josh Allen's not the only one that's having a bad September. And what I'm really interested in seeing is, you know, Trey Woods in the first couple of games has started getting a little more action out of the backfield. You're talking about a true freshman who I didn't realize he was 6'3 and 210 pounds.
There you go.
But, you know, he had, you know, maybe limited success against both Gardner Webb and Oregon. But, you know, is this his time to step up and shine? You know, is he the kind of guy who can, you know, give the offense what Brian Hill did for the past 2 years? And it's really interesting that I remember last week, you know, running back was the only one listed with three players on the two deep. Now Woods is second on that list behind Milo Hall. So I'm really interested to see just how much Craig Bohl decides to kind of let him loose against this Hawaii front seven, because they've been pretty decent so far, I think, in regards to stopping the run. If I were a Wyoming fan, I think that this is probably the place where, you know, if Josh Allen is going to prove his bona fides, you know, we just saw this Hawaii secondary get torn to shreds by Josh Rosen a week ago. If Allen wants to be considered that same caliber of quarterback, this is his time to do it.
Yeah, you would. That's a good point there, because Rosen put up. Trying to pull it up here really quick, but he had what, 4 touchdown passes in that game, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so.
And Hawaii overall, they are dead last in Mountain West in total yards. They gave up. He had 5 touchdowns, completed 82% of his passes. Here's the thing: they allowed not just 373 versus Josh Rosen, 270 whoever Western Carolina's quarterback was, and when they played UMass Week 1, 300 yards. And almost 9 yards at pass attempt against.
Mm-hmm.
They're completing 2 of 3 passes against the secondary. So maybe, like, I probably, if I were more confident in Josh Allen at the moment, this probably would be the area where I'd say, oh, yeah, he'll take advantage of this. Maybe, I would say this is more likely of this being a mismatch than, say, Hawaii's front 7 stopping the running game. But I think that's both, I'd say they're fairly equal because, again, Wyoming's rushing attack. Bad, very bad, and that's the problem. Until they find whoever, because they have Overstreet as the last running back, the third running back. Now they only average 2.5 yards per carry, which is what, worst in the country, I want to say.
It's something like last, that, yeah.
Last in the conference for sure. So I will still say the running game of Wyoming is a very overmatched against Hawaii's front 7 or linebacking group, and. Again, yeah, they are actually not last. They are, hold on, I don't know if I know exactly because I would like to know those things. Oh, I'm at rush defense. Never mind. Let's move on to another topic of this game. So with this, let me ask you this. It's been a road game. Are you surprised that Wyoming is favored by a touchdown?
I mean, not necessarily. I think maybe there's still a little bit of national credibility on Josh Allen's part. One thing I also think might help their cause is the fact that, you know, yes, they struggled against both Iowa and Oregon, but they've maintained their propensity for forcing turnovers too. And I think that that's another thing to watch in this game because, you know, Drew Brown has been pretty solid, all things considered, but, you know, he has 4 interceptions thus far. And I think, you know, and he has a fumble that, you know, he didn't lose it, but he still fumbled the ball on one of his 7 carries. So I think that if Wyoming can continue to, you know, create opportunities for its offense, you know, Hawaii hasn't been that great at stopping teams once they get past midfield. On defense, they're only 111th in points per trip inside the 40. You know, whether Wyoming can actually take advantage of that, though, is, you know, an entire other question because they, on offense, rank 103rd in that same category. But I think that if it comes down to that, if Wyoming can win the turnover battle, that, I think, is probably the biggest X factor in this game beyond, you know, Josh Allen versus the secondary.
All right, so as of this recording, 22 minutes ago, I went to the trib.com, mm-hmm. Casper Star Tribune. Most recent article written by Brandon Foster, Wyoming secondary looks to force more turnovers after being tested by Oregon.
There you go.
So they're talking about, even though they have a pick in every game, they've had some drop passes. Their article goes on to talk about how they're making their schemes working well. They just got to basically complete the play. Because last year they had at least, I don't remember how many, but a couple, not just interceptions, but defensive touchdowns off pick sixes. It's hard to replicate that. But it seems like they're doing okay. They're just not getting the interceptions. They're just getting pass breakups instead. And so that looks like to be an emphasis this week. So we'll see how that goes in. Drew, like I said, Drew Brown can throw the ball, throw it up. They're going to throw a lot too with John Asura, Dylan Colley. I want to see what John Asura does against the secondary because he had the ankle issue a couple weeks ago. They're coming off the bye game. He is by far, would you say he's maybe the best receiver in the conference right now, for at least statistically, for what he's been catching and doing through a couple of games?
I mean, a lot of that, I think, is dependent on, you know, having one big game against a pretty lousy UMass team. I'm not going to say yes, but I am going to say he's in the conversation, probably. Let's put it that way.
He put up, what did he do versus UCLA? He did pretty well.
Yeah, but he also missed the one game. So can he actually be the best receiver in the conference if he hasn't played every game? Let's not forget about Michael Gallup, after all.
I'm just saying. I said numbers-wise, the 10 touchdowns, 200-plus yards. Or you got Devontae Boyd, or you have, like, Bailey Gaither of San Jose has 4 touchdowns. That's not bad either.
Mm-hmm.
I just think here's what's going to come down to this game. I think Kawhi's offense might struggle a little bit, but with them being balanced, like Dyson May St. Juiced and the passing game, they'll be fine. Like, they'll move the ball one way or another. It may not be explosive, but I'm thinking Wyoming's offense will have some say in how this game ends up being, because UMass isn't very good, and they put up, 35 points against Hawaii they allowed?
Mm-hmm.
They scored against Hawaii. I'm pretty sure Wyoming's offense is better than UMass. But I'm thinking this will be the biggest test they've had. Oh, we got UCLA, but it should be a big test. Like, if it's going to come down to Wyoming being victorious, they're going to have to move the ball, and they're going to have some chances to do so against his defense. But I might pick Hawaii to win this one. Am I crazy to pick Hawaii to win outright?
I don't think so. Here's one more thing that we haven't mentioned yet.
What do you got?
Did you realize that Hawaii is 4th in the country in sacks?
I did not. That's pretty good, right? Number 4 overall? Is it per game? Per game or total?
Total.
Okay, they got the extra game in there. You know that, if you're being nitpicky.
Okay, well, if you want to go by if you want to go by sacks per game, they're 6th.
Okay, so very, very well.
So for as bad as the secondary has looked in the early going, it's also worth noting that their front 7, and especially, you know, a guy like Jelani Tavai, who's been doing basically everything, you know, he has a couple of sacks and like 5 run stuffs, according to Football Study Hall. You know, he's a guy who's been all over the place, you know, but he's not the only one that has a couple of sacks. David Manoah has been really good up the middle. You know, Jeremiah Pritchard, playing linebacker right next to Tavai, also has 2 sacks. So it's not just one guy that they're going to have to worry about in this front 7. And it's going to be really interesting to see whether this offensive line can hold up against that kind of attack.
Well, also, if you look at it, I was looking at sacks allowed, but Wyoming's only given up 5 through the whole season. It's about middle of the pack, or top third, I would say. But then again, you got Josh Allen, who runs around and evades sacks. So I guarantee there'll be a lot of QB hurries, but I'm not sure how many sacks there'll be. And if you got QB hurries, Josh Allen on the run, he likes to gunsling it, that could be interception town.
I guess we'll see.
What's your pick?
I have Hawaii in this game.
Oh, me too. I got the Warriors outright.
I mean, I think it'll be a close game, but, you know, Hawaii has not looked terrible in any of its games so far. Like, yeah, there are some questions in the secondary, but it's still, to me, an open question as to whether Wyoming at this point is the kind of team that could take advantage of that. So I'm kind of expecting a back-and-forth battle. I'm expecting it to be within 1 score, but I'm going to say Hawaii 30, Wyoming 24.
All right, I'll go 30 to—I'll say Wyoming covers, like 30 to 27.
All right.
And not to say I want to be right, but Wyoming's bowl chances are getting a lot slimmer after this loss. Potential loss, I'll say. All right, let's stick on Saturday. We'll get to that Friday game later on, just because it's Friday and maybe people listening Friday night. So we'll get to that Boise game last, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, let's just work our way backwards.
Well, sure. We'll go San Diego State Air Force, I guess, is that's where we're going backwards.
All right.
Is this the game of the week?
It kind of has to be, doesn't it?
Definitely. Number 22 ranked San Diego State, 3-0, taking on 1-1 Air Force, CBS Sports Network. Also, hey, if you have DirecTV Now, you might be able to get CBS Sports Network in the near future, so check that out. I just saw some news on that today.
Very nice.
For us Mountain West folks, you got what, Hulu, DirecTV Now potentially. What's the other one? YouTube TV if you're in some one of the markets. But this game is a 3-point favorite by the Aztecs. Kind of low, in my opinion.
Really?
Just because I think a little low.
That's interesting.
You think it's too much?
I think it's a little bit closer than I anticipated for as good as San Diego State has looked in the first 3 games.
I was thinking about 5. That would have been fine for me. But 3, that's just a field goal, man. Let me ask you this. So, we didn't discuss this in the recap because I don't know why we didn't, but I was doing my quarterback ranking this week.
Mm-hmm.
That game against Stanford, despite the yardage being a little bit low for Christian Chapman, that was by far his best game ever as a quarterback, I would say.
I don't disagree.
He had the most completions, most attempts. I think it was his second highest passing percentage against a FBS school, and the other one was, I think, that Cincinnati bowl game, and it was like a 0.2% difference, so basically his best percentage game ever. And that made good passes. He had the touchdown at late in the game to David Wells, who bulldozed in the end zone. Hey, I said it. Michael Holder had a big game as well, maybe because he's playing against his twin brother. But he's what I put him in ranking. Top four quarterback, right there with Drew Brown, Josh Allen, Nick Stevens, and wherever you want to put Boise quarterbacks. But if you look what Michigan – here's the thing. Air Force played Michigan last week. Air Force's defense is really good. Well, or – conversely, could we say Michigan's offense is bad? Which way should we take this?
I mean, if it were me, it seemed like Michigan was having the same kind of red zone issues that they did the week before against Cincinnati. I think there's a, okay. I think there's a little bit of truth to both statements.
There has to be, because you can't give all the credit or blame to either team. But then again, I would say Aztec's offense is better than whatever Michigan trots out there.
Yeah, that's probably true, too.
It's probably not even close if you think about it. Not to compare at the moment, but let's see. Aztecs are a what top 20 rushing team. We got Michigan, who's way, as I type in right now, way down at 42. Not too bad. But here's the thing. Aztecs, they finish shut up. They finish drives in their games. Like, compared to what Michigan did, they don't do it. Aztecs will take a what they'd run, was it 42 plays versus Stanford?
It was something extremely low like that, yeah.
And Rocky Long talks about we don't need to run 100 plays because it screws with your defense. Here's the thing. Here's what this game really comes down to, if you think about it, is that can Aztec stop the run option attack? That's what it always comes down to when you play Air Force.
I mean, it sounds cliche, but it's kind of true. And, I mean, this isn't a matchup that we've seen really since the 2015 championship game. But, you know, for as good as San Diego State's defense was that year defending the run, you know, if you go back and look at the game log from 2015, on the year they gave up only about 3.1 yards per carry. But in that championship game, they gave up 6.6 yards per carry. And, you know, the year before that, when they played in the regular season, they, you know, they were able to clamp down on them at that point. So they have had some success in the past, in the past against this triple option defense. But, you know, whether they can keep it up is always kind of an open question, no matter what kind of defense you're up against.
It's true. And the main thing whenever you see this offense is that don't give up the huge plays. Like, if they give up 5 yards per carry against Air Force, but every run is 3 to 12 yards, I think they'll live with that. They just don't want to have that 58-yard, 48-yard touchdown run against you or the big plays. And also, there's a reason late in the game against Michigan, Air Force brought in Nate Romine. Arian Werthmann's not the best passer. And so if Air Force happens to be in a situation like they were versus Michigan – late in the game, second half, third and long, second long, obvious passing situations. That's what Aztecs need to do. So if they can give up, like I said, even if it's 5 yards per carry, but have them be second and eight, third and five or longer, there's Air Force is not going to be successful. Air Force needs to move the ball like we know they can and get 5, 6, 7, 8 yards per carry with big plays mixed in. But I don't know if they really have that great running back to do that. I know Werthmann will do well, and he ran, what, 25 times last week? But I know you got Tim McVay, but is there anybody else really? Or do you really trust Tim McVay to be that guy?
I mean, I would. The bigger question that I don't know that we still have an answer for is, you know, how effective are the fullbacks going to be? Because they didn't really need Parker Wilson against VMI in the opener. And, you know, they basically had zero success running between the tackles against Michigan.
And stop trying, too.
Yeah. And so it's going to be really interesting to see because, you know, San Diego State, obviously, they run the 3-3-5, and they do have, you know, three quality guys up front, like Noble Hall. We haven't really talked about him much in previews, but he's had a pretty great season so far. And, you know, they have Sergio Phillips in the middle of that defense. But those guys physically aren't as big as the guys that Michigan was putting up in their front seven. You know, there's a little more of a level playing field, I think. But, you know, whoever wins that matchup along the lines, I think, is going to have a huge advantage in this game. You know, if it turns out more like, you know, the 2015 game where it was a really back and forth struggle because Air Force was able to chew up yardage 5 yards at a time. Or if it's going to be more like those regular season matchups from the years before that, where they were able to clamp down and really keep the Falcons at arm's length. You know, I think, you know, you look at the guys on the left-hand side of the Air Force, you know, offensive line, Jake Barnhorst, Ryan Beveridge. Those two guys versus Noble Hall and Sergio Phillips might decide the game.
So let me ask you this about that defense for San Diego State. Because you got the triple option or run option for Air Force. Are they going to, because you, well, try to put this the right way, you don't have enough same amount of big guys up front. Because it's not a traditional 4-3 or 3-4, you have another guy, the hybrid guy. Do you think that's any sort of disadvantage, or is it because they have more speed, they'll be fine chasing down McVay or Will Parker or Worthman, or heck, even Roman if he gets into the game? Or would it be beneficial if, say, Rocky Long puts up an extra offensive lineman in this game at all to counter that rushing attack?
That's a really great question, because at least on the stat sheet, you know, Parker Baldwin's obviously been playing really well, but if you look at the numbers, he's been relatively quiet. I think what he's been able to do is enable, you know, the linebackers especially to go and make plays. So, you know, if he plays a little bit closer to the line in general, you know, I think his presence there is going to open up, you know, the guys, you know, Ronley Lakalaka, for instance, to make plays, or, you know, someone like Troy Cassidy, who's, you know, stepped into the starting lineup and played pretty well, I think. I think, you know, he's someone that Air Force always has to kind of scheme for, and it's going to be really interesting to see how that relates to, you know, who ends up stepping up to make plays in that San Diego State, not necessarily a front seven, but a front six.
One thing I was going to say, I just thought of it right now, reading through the kind of some recaps of the game, and remember the game itself. Michigan has a lot of speed.
Mm-hmm.
Air Force couldn't go left to right with McVay. Maybe it would be the best position for the Rocky Long defense to go, don't bring an extra lineman, stick with your defense, which, not that he needs to change because what he's going up against, but have the speed and shut down Air Force at the edges. And then it'll force Air Force to maybe run the fullback dive more often because, yeah, while the Aztec defense is good, the size is not quite the same as Michigan, even though I would say the Aztec defense is comparable to Michigan. It's just a size thing, and it might be they might have a little more success moving up the middle, like off tackle or even fullback dive. So I think you just take speed out there and force them to go with the middle because you're just as good.
I mean, and it kind of goes without saying, but I think if Air Force wants to pull an upset in this game, they're going to have to hit the home run pass at some point. And, yeah, you know, Worthman obviously has a lot of skills, but as a passer, he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start this year. You know, he only has 19 attempts, but he has 5 sacks in those dropbacks. And, you know, if you look at Football Study Hall, his sack rate is 20%. Obviously, that number is going to go down at some point. But, you know, if they are in a position where they can catch the Aztecs defense by surprise, the same way that they did with the 64-yard touchdown to Ronald Cleveland last week, Worthman's going to have to show he can hit that pass because they're not going to get many of those chances where they, you know, get the Aztecs defense on their heels. So, I mean, that's probably the most unpredictable X factor. I think, you know, you can watch, you know, the war along the trenches and see who's winning that battle. You're really not going to see that home run throw coming until it happens. And then, you know, when it happens, is he going to have the same kind of accuracy that he had last year?
We'll find out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
One note I want to say about quarterback stuff and wrap this up really quick. So I'm reading from the Brent Brigman. We need to have him on the podcast. You know why?
Because he's a good reporter.
There's that. And he also tags us in every tweet he does with a photo.
That's right.
To let us be aware of his articles he writes. And so I appreciate that. So we'll have him on. But he just went some news and notes, the final one last little bit about the Michigan game. So apparently some reporters, not him, are trying to contrive a quarterback competition or battle between Nate Romine and Aaron Werthmann. Apparently, he said somebody from the Denver Post came down to practice, which means if you call it the paper by name, that means they're not always that down at practice for Air Force. Because that's what I take from that. And they just mentioned, the guy makes a good, whoever it was, guy or gal, made some good point. Question came back, if Romine's skill set is better suited for a quick strike, offense, and comeback, why didn't Air Force go to him sooner when they're down, just despite him getting the ball when they're down 9 and 6-10 remaining? And they just mentioned, say, at one point, running their off normal offense, rolling down 2 scores. And it's just kind of deflecting, but I get their point, but Werthmann is the guy no matter what, I would say. I don't see why any reason Romine would come in, because while Werthmann took over for Romine because of, was it injury last year, Werthmann's, I think, the better player to move the offense down the field for what Air Force normally wants to do in running the ball.
I definitely think so, too.
All right, I just wanted to bring it up. So what's your prediction of this game? Are the Aztecs going to be 4-0?
I think they're probably going to get a really good fight, but... You know, and I fully expect both of these defenses to flex a little bit, but, you know, if you look at San Diego State, you see that they have the best player on the field. So,
oh yeah, the guy Rashard Penny, we haven't even mentioned.
We haven't even mentioned him at all. And I mean, and actually, before I get my prediction, I just want to mention one last thing. You know, obviously San Diego State's defense has looked really good in the first 3 games. They're 6th in havoc rate, which is, you know, for those of you who need a refresher, just number of plays with tackle for loss, forced fumble, or pass defense. You know, Air Force is no slouch in that category either. You know, they rank just outside the top 30 in havoc rate as a team. But I don't think Rashard Penny is the kind of player who can be fully contained. And I think that ultimately will be the difference in this game. That you'll probably get a steady game from Christian Chapman. You'll probably get a pretty good game from Arian Werthmann. But I do think that the Aztecs will survive this one. I'm going to call it, you know, 24-20.
Do you think there's any letdown for San Diego State after beating Stanford?
I don't think so. Because I think both teams might, you know, take a little bit of time to feel each other out. And I think both teams are definitely going to land some haymakers at some point in this matchup. But I do think the Aztecs are good enough to survive.
I think the Aztecs will win as well. I'll go... I don't know. I like the Air Force defense, but part of it for me is that Michigan offense is just so terrible. They're not good at all. I think Aztecs are a better offense. I'm going to go 31-14 San Diego State.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I just don't think it's the offense, I think, for San Diego State. Air Force, while I think their defense is much better, they did good things. I think Aztecs are just better than Michigan and can move the ball. And maybe, whoever's back there returning kicks will get something done too. Short fields, perhaps. Because special teams was an issue punting for Air Force against Michigan. So if there's a bad punt, and whether it's Penny or Juwan Washington back there, there could be some special team stuff that goes Aztec's way.
All right,
next game. Can there be a spread high enough you would take Nevada against Washington State on the road in Pullman?
What is it right now?
28.
I would probably take that.
Really? You would take 28 points for Nevada?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know, man. What did David Cornwell do to piss off Jay Norvell?
I don't know. Maybe he...
Did you... Go ahead.
No, I was... I lost the joke in my head. It was there and it was gone.
Sorry. Did you know, I think there's 3 of them, maybe 4. All 3 Alabama backup quarterbacks who transferred are not starting for their team.
This is why I always say, take every graduate transfer quarterback with a grain of salt.
You're right on. Zach Klein, remember how that worked out, right?
Well, I could have told you. I told everybody that. Nobody listens.
So did I. That was like his 5th school. Come on, really? He went to Cal twice. What does that tell you? I would say, I was hoping this one would be different because Cornwell was actually named the starter heading into fall camp. But they're going with the Grand, is it what we call him, Grand Cayman? Is that where we're going to go with? Cayman Curtin? Curiton?
Still a great nickname.
It is. You're in Nevada. The Grand Canyon's right nearby. Well, I guess closer to Vegas than Reno, but they're 0-3. Washington State's really good. Well, yeah, really good. Let me tell you right now, I'm not taking the points. I would take Washington State to cover by a mile. Washington State's defense... They did pretty good with Boise State when I watched them, but I don't see how Nevada moves the ball enough to score points if they're going with their true freshman quarterback and starting the youth experience right away just to get minutes logged for this team for hopefully that year two or year three of Norvell gets better.
I mean, I think what might help them kind of, I don't think they're going to win the game, but I think what could definitely help their upset bid is trying to lean on the running game as much as possible. Yes, I know it's an air raid offense. Yes, I know they want to be pass first. And it's worth noting that, you know, for as rough as, you know, Kiraitin was in the first half of that game against Idaho State, he did come out and play better in the second half. So you can hang your hat on that a little bit. But also the fact that Jackson Kincaid and Kelton Moore haven't been that bad so far. And if I'm looking at one number that stands out to me, Nevada's eighth right now in stuff rate, which means that they aren't getting tackled behind the line very often. And, you know, if Kiraitin struggles to, you know, move the chains off the bat, you know, it might behoove Norvell to kind of lean on that 1-2 punch that's emerging a little bit. Because, you know, you've got two guys who have combined for about 400 yards so far. They're averaging over 5 yards a carry. And it's not like Washington State has a really good lights-out defense. Like, you know, by a lot of metrics, they're kind of middle of the pack. So if they can give Kiraitin easy passes, if they can, you know, set him up with third and short or second and short or something like that, if they can put Kincaid and Moore in situations to succeed, that might be the recipe for allowing them to hang around for a little while.
Do you know who the four-string quarterback is for Nevada?
I do not.
Neither do I, but apparently Chris Murray got emails and tweets about playing the fourth quarterback.
Oh, no.
Or playing all four quarterbacks. However, I didn't even know there was a fourth quarterback. I just know Ty Gagey, Cornwell, and Grant Kamen. That's all I heard. However, did you see his tweet about he got an email? Let me find it here. It was basically an email from a parent or the mother of one of the quarterbacks attempting to stay anonymous through the email, yet her email was like first name, last name, at whatever. If you're going to do that, make up a fake email. Come on. They're not being covert with that move.
But, I mean, I think on the flip side, you know, for as much as Nevada can lean on its running game, you know, the biggest mismatch of the weekend, I think, has got to be Washington State's Luke Falk against the secondary.
Oh, boy.
You know, because you're looking at a guy who has 9 touchdowns against 1 interception so far, and he's completing 77% of his passes. I mean, we already knew he was legit, but when you're going up against a passing defense that is, you know, it hasn't been like Hawaii bad, but it's still been pretty rough. And I think that, you know, when you consider the quarterback play that they've had to play against, yeah, you know, Logan Woodside's not a slouch. And, you know, the guy from Northwestern, whose name escapes me right now, but they gave up over 70% completions to both of those guys.
Oh, boy.
So
is it possible? Let me ask you, I'm not a math guy, but can Luke Falk get over 100% completion rate against his defense?
I'm pretty sure that's mathematically impossible.
What if I include running yards somehow or running attempts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the secondary, you know, kind of working its way into this new system has just not really worked out for them so far. You know, they haven't forced nearly enough turnovers. I think Elijah Moody's the only one that has an interception so far. You know, they're okay as far as pass breakups when compared to the rest of the conference. But if they can't put the offense into advantageous situations by creating turnovers, you know, let's not forget this is an offense, too, that has shown a propensity for giving the ball away too. Like I believe they're -5 on the year, and
they're not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it's like a foregone conclusion, because there is a path to victory here. It's just a very unlikely one.
I see zero path to victory. I'm sorry. I think I put my power rankings, I think I have Nevada dead last.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you lose to Idaho State, it's kind of hard to argue otherwise.
It's not just that. You lose Idaho State, who was just trashed by Utah State the week before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put really quick our power rankings. I'm looking at those really quick. Somehow Boise was not unanimous, so shame on the two people who voted for Boise State number one. Or, I mean, San Diego State's not unanimous. And then it's basically, who did you vote for? Did you submit your rankings yet, Matt?
I did.
Okay, I don't have the timestamp. Did you put Nevada last?
I'm trying to remember. Off the top of my head, I cannot recall.
I see hijacking in our poll already because somebody put Colorado State 12th. We say you can do that if you contribute to our Patreon. You can hijack, but here are the 12th place votes really quick. Over half say Nevada, which was 7. You got 1 Fresno, 1 CSU, 2 UNLV, 2 San Jose State. No Utah State? I'm kind of surprised about that. People still like the Aggies, apparently.
We'll get to them in a minute. Well,
somebody put Utah State 5. Heesh, I don't know, whatever. Okay, so what's your final score in this game? Because you've gone through a lot of, you brought all the facts for this particular game compared to what I did this time around. I just don't see Grand Cayman moving the ball all that well, maybe a little bit. Because Washington can allow some points. I think Nevada might be able to, this might be one of the better offensive games, but I'm gonna go 50-20 for Washington State.
I think it's going to be a backdoor cover, but I think it'll be something like Washington State 45-21.
Let's just hope Mike Leach doesn't pull a James Franklin in for an ice kicker when it's a 40-point victory or something.
That was mean.
We don't have a fourth field goal block unit. Who cares? It's your fourth unit in the game. that was ridiculous. All right, next game. If we go in order here, I guess we kind of missed one. Since I have Utah State as a marked team here. Utah State at San Jose State conference game. Is this going to be the only conference victory for either team, whoever wins?
Ooh, that's a dark thought.
I'm just saying.
I mean, it's kind of within the realm of possibility, though. Like, we talked last week about how Matt Wells might already be coaching for his job. You know,
he is coaching for his job. Sorry, he is.
Yeah, and I mean, if he loses to San Jose State, you know, we know that the Spartans have some pieces. It's just that they haven't been totally consistent so far. You know, we know they have pretty good wide receivers, but we don't really know what the latest is with Montel Aaron as of yet, unless I'm mistaken.
I checked when I did my quarterback rankings yesterday. Brett Brenneman said he's not – basically, coaches with thinking they have national secrets to keep from the other opposing team would not give an update on the injury. However, I don't think he practiced. And if you look at the game, at the Utah game, if you're ever on crutches, it's not a good sign. If you're out of uniform, it's not a good sign. If your knee is wrapped in ice, it's not a good sign. He had all three after that game or during that game.
Okay, so to answer my own question, Josh Love is listed atop the depth chart right now. And Sam Allen is listed as the backup.
Okay, there you go. I guess they're honest in some way or another. I just recall what I read last night. But are you surprised it's not Allen over Josh Love?
A little bit. If only because, you know, and granted, maybe it's just because of the fact that Love was facing a lot of tough competition. But he didn't really look all that great when he started in the opener against South Florida. And he didn't really do much of anything to, you know, look like he deserved to seize the job. So it is a little bit interesting that they don't choose to go to Sam Allen instead. But, you know, this is a Utah State defense that just gave up over 600 yards of total offense to Wake Forest. So,
oh boy.
So, I mean, I'm not going to question the move too much. This might just be, you know, Josh Love's best shot against a beatable team to show what he can do.
Yeah, I would say with Love, he's between him and Montel there. Aaron, not Allen, sorry. Montel was getting in the end zone. Josh Love was not. He had the one touchdown versus Utah where he made it somewhat interesting at the end of the first half where it was a field goal interception for San Jose State, and then off the interception he scored a touchdown. That was about it. He hasn't moved the ball all that well and not getting in the end zone. And Utah State has like guys like Jalen Davis in secondary. They got pummeled by Wake Forest. They got pummeled by Idaho State. They're just not a – overall, Utah State's not a good team. And who knows if how much – is Kent Myers going to play? Is he going to start? Because we know Coach Wells is pretty loyal to his quarterbacks, which is kind of why Chucky Keaton was still starting when he probably shouldn't have. Because Kent Myers didn't look good. It's going to be, like, starting right now, it's Kent Myers behind Jordan Love, who's number two. But this is going to be a game that where Myers is going to show up, and also the running game, because Luan Hunt's the starter now that Tony Lindsay's out for the year. Maybe we'll see El Toro Allen get some carries. But either way, I'd expect this game to be the best offensive game for either team.
So with that in mind, like, who do you think it's a better opportunity for?
Well, Spartans are a one-point favorite at home. Take that, whatever it is. Honestly, I think San Jose State might be the better team here. I don't know. Because here's the thing. You see what Kent Myers did against Utah State. Mm-hmm. They creamed them, moved the ball at will. But here's the thing. They played Wisconsin, who's really good, and Wake's better than I gave them credit for. They've only scored 20 points in non-FCS games. That's not good. They'll score more points than San Jose State in that, but here's the thing. I don't trust the running game for Utah State one bit. The offensive line's awful. It's going to be, if they're going to win, it's going to be because Kent Myers has a big game passing, and San Jose State has a decent secondary of, like, Andrew Sostery back there.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... It's hard to take too much from the numbers just because of the caliber of opponents that both of these two teams have been playing.
For sure.
But if you don't trust Utah State's running attack, I think it has to be said that at least through three games, and granted against very good competition, that San Jose State's run offense has been even worse. And I want to see if, you know, someone can step up and seize that job, you know, because the guys I think we expected to, you know, be on top of the heap in the beginning of the year, you know, Malik Roberson's not even averaging 3 yards carry so far. Through three games, he hasn't gotten it done. You know, Zamor Ziegler's been okay, but he hasn't been nearly consistent enough. And then Dijon Packer had some moments, I believe, last week against Texas where he looked like he might get an opportunity. You know, one of those guys I think is going to have to step up and give Love a little bit of help. But even beyond that, Love is also going to have to be able to take better care of the football. Because, you know, in his limited action, he's already thrown 3 interceptions and lost 2 of 3 fumbles. Granted, Utah State hasn't been great at forcing turnovers so far, but, you know, you don't want to give the ball away, especially against a beatable team like the Aggies.
So who's going to run the ball better? Because it's both rushing offenses are not very good, and we know San Jose State's rush defense is pretty terrible. Who's going to run the ball better?
Ooh.
Who's going to have more rushing yards, non-quarterback rushing yards?
That's a really difficult question to answer. I mean, if I had to pick one, I think that I would probably trust San Jose State a little bit more.
Wow. Really? Why?
I mean, just...
How would you...
I mean, did you see that Wake Forest game last week? It looked like the front seven was getting blown off the ball nearly all the time.
Okay, that's fair. I would go agree with you because whatever you think of Tony Lindsay, he was one of the starters or top two on the depth chart, and he's gone. So I guess San Jose State will have more rushing yards than Utah State.
I mean, I think...
Not including Kent Myers yardage, whatever that may be.
And I think that, you know, San Jose State also has a guy like Frank Ginda who, you know, yes, even though San Jose State's been getting pounded in non-conference play so far, he's been playing really well. Like, he leads the team in tackles. I believe he actually leads the nation in tackles, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he has 4.5 tackles for loss, which, by the way, doesn't even lead the team because William Osai has 6.5 tackles for loss. They have a pair of pretty good linebackers that Utah State's going to have to account for, and I don't know that they've shown the ability to do so.
Yeah, real quick, Ginda not only leads the nation in tackles, but also tackles per game at 14.25.
Yeah, so there you go.
Number two? You'll never get who number two is. You'll never guess.
No, probably not.
Do you know who Bailey Laulagi is?
Oh, he's the UNLV linebacker.
13 tackles per game.
Very interesting.
And to keep him out in West, the top five, number four, Leighton Evander Esch, 12 tackles per game, top four.
Very nice.
Boom. So who do you take into this one? Who do you got?
I'm going to take San Jose State.
Same here. I got to go to Spartans. Is it Sparty Up, or what do we call Spartan Up? Is that what they're calling these days? Or is that Michigan State?
Last I checked, their hashtag was just let's go.
Let's go, Spartans. Let's go.
I'm going to say San Jose State 24, Utah State 20.
I'm going to say 17 to 14.
That's fair.
17 to 14. Okay, all right. Where do we go next year? Is it Tulsa, UNL, or Tulsa, New Mexico? Yeah. UNLV's off this week, sorry. Do you know the line? Have you looked at the line on this game yet?
I imagine it's probably Tulsa by a lot.
You're correct on Tulsa. The lot part comes into question at 9.5.
Wow.
That's not a lot.
That is not a lot.
What were you thinking? 14, 16? Because it's in Tulsa as well. It's a road game for the Lobos.
I was thinking probably somewhere around 13, yeah.
I was super excited. Wasn't it they play like 2 years ago, and I thought this game would be great, and Tulsa just ran them off the field?
Yes.
Are they actually going to run the Lobos off the field this game?
That is a very interesting question, because for as great as they've looked running the football, you know, like I saw them play last year, you know, against Fresno State, and, you know, Dane Evans was like the guy, but you could also see that, you know, they had a guy like D'Angelo Brewer who was, you know, basically pounding the rock at will in the second half of that game. You know, he is their number one dude, and he's had a pretty strong start to the year. You know, he's got 447 yards. He's averaging about 4.5 yards per carry. He has 4 touchdowns. They have 4 guys who have 4 touchdowns on the ground so far. But did you see the box score of that Toledo game last week?
Was it 47-43?
It was 54-51.
Oh, 54-51. That's over 100 points if my math is correct.
Yeah, and you know, they got a lot of people are going to get blown out by Oklahoma State this year. They allowed 59 points to Oklahoma State. They allowed 42 to Louisiana Lafayette. And
are they any good?
Probably not. They might be okay, but you know, put it in the appropriate context. This is an okay Sun Belt team. And then they gave up 54 to Toledo. You know, in the same way that we talked about Josh Allen getting on track against the Hawaii secondary.
Hold on a second. Okay. I went to Sun Belt standings real quick. Also, beware, it's Louisiana, not Louisiana Lafayette.
It's Louisiana Lafayette, whatever. They can come at me.
It's like the Nevada. I put in UNR instead of Nevada. I'm like, come on, whatever. This just popped out to me. Points four, they lead the Sun Belt in points scored for them at 114. Points allowed, 159. Mm-hmm. No other Sun Belt team has given up triple digits this year. And in the country, you have only 6, 7, 8, barely a dozen teams give up over 100 points so far in the year. And they've clearly given up the most points, if I'm looking correctly, at 159. So, what's up with Tulsa's defense, if that's the case?
Well, last week it was that Logan Woodside ate them alive. 22 of 33, 458 yards. He was averaging 13 yards an attempt. That's crazy. And as a team, they were averaging almost a first down every single play.
Is this the actual national introduction on ESPN3 of the Throwbos?
I mean, if that's something they want to do, this is probably a really good time to try and do it. Because, you know, for as good as the offense has looked, and make no mistake, Tulsa's going to get points against this defense.
Oh, yeah.
But they might, you know, allow nearly as many, and you know, for a New Mexico running game that's looked, dare I say, sluggish so far, you know, if a guy like Tyrone Owens is going to get back on track at any point, and now's a really good time to do it.
So I assume you're gonna take the over that is 67 in this game.
I would absolutely take the over in this game.
Take the over. Hey, if you want to get to Tulsa, it's only $8 tickets, just saying. So, not bad. So, Lobos, real quick, injury front. They last week, Lamar Jordan got knocked out of the game. They also had they were missing their other quarterback, Tuveka Tuioti, excuse me. Right now they're both on the depth chart. Jordan's listed as a starter. I would expect both to play in this game. Would you say that? I think that's fair.
Probably. I mean, I think if, you know, if they want Tuioti to be a passer, you know, one thing worth pointing out, Tulsa, you know, not only are they, were they giving up nearly a first down against Tulsa per play, but if you look at the more advanced stats, you know, passing down success rate on defense, dead last in the country.
They give up a first down per pass attempt, man. You're right, 11.6.
Okay, just as a whole, they are dead last in the country. They give up 9.39 yards per play.
Per play?
Per play.
Not pass, per play offensively?
Do you want to know what the next lowest figure is?
What?
7.86.
Who's that?
That is East Carolina. They give up more than a yard and a half per play.
East Carolina is so bad. They're so terrible.
They give up a yard and a half more per play than the next to last team in the FBS as far as yards per play. That is ridiculous.
They give up 638 yards per game. East Carolina and Tulsa, if they played each other, that would be magical because, sorry to go off topic here, but yards per game, they both give up over 630 yards per game.
Oh, they don't play each other. That would have been amazing to watch.
Oh, they're in the same conference, too. They're the American. Dang it. I didn't even think about that with all the realignment fun stuff.
I mean, and we, you know, we question sometimes New Mexico's defense, but, you know, I think in this game especially, they're going to have to figure out how to make stops in the running game, which is something that they haven't. Yeah, they did a little bit of that against Boise State last week. I think they did an okay job holding Wolpin and, you know, Madison in check.
Whoa, you're not giving them credit, man. They're giving up less than 3 yards per carry.
Yeah, so, but I mean, this is like a whole nother level. Like, this is a better run attack than they faced, you know, so far, because, you know, a lot of that had to do with Abilene Christian, which is a pass first team, in New Mexico State, which is a very obvious pass first team. This, I think, is probably their first big test because, you know, in the next 4 weeks, you know, you get a road trip at Tulsa, and then you get Air Force at home, and then Colorado State at home. Those are all three very good teams at running the football. So it's going to be a real crucible for this team because, yes, they have looked pretty good so far, but that was against teams that don't put an emphasis on running the ball. This team does.
All right, let's say this, though, because if you take just a Boise game, that's a, what, 3.8, 3.9? That's still about middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. So it's well above average. So maybe they are a little bit better than we thought. But this, like I said, this is going to be their toughest matchup on the ground and in the air. And I think Tulsa is going to win like 40-25, something like that.
I mean,
I'll go a better score. I'll go 40-28 Tulsa.
I mean, I think New Mexico is going to get points, but, you know, for as fast as Tulsa is, like, if you look at pace, even they're second in, you know, the amount of plays that they run and how fast they run them. And I think ultimately that's going to pay a price for the New Mexico defense. So I think it'll be close for three quarters, but I do think Tulsa eventually pulls away. So I have it as like 42-35.
42-35. That's pretty close.
Yeah.
All right. Should we go to the next blowout, potential blowout on the schedule?
Yeah, let's do that.
Ohio State hosting UNLV. Can we just complain about JT Barrett? Should he not be quarterback or whatever? Is that what Ohio State fans are getting at this season, this week, or every week so far?
Are they already pining for Tate Martell?
Yeah, they're just not happy with JT Barrett because you lose to, oh, just probably one of the best teams in the country in Oklahoma. That's all.
No big deal, right?
Yeah. So is this the Armani Rogers showcase game?
I mean, I think if they want to, I don't know. Because I think if they want to pull an upset bid, they have to stay balanced. You know, I think they have to lean on their run game because, you know, with as well as Lexington Thomas has played so far, he's probably the best running back in the conference not named Rashad Penny right now. know, you're talking about a guy who, yeah, he's played Idaho and Howard so far, but 9 yards a carry is nothing to shake a stick at. And obviously Ohio State's a different caliber of defense, but I think, you know, you don't necessarily want to put everything on a redshirt freshman quarterback making his first start in an environment like this. I don't think it's going to be easy, though, because, you know, for as good as UNLV's run game has looked in the early going, you know, you could say the same thing about Ohio State's run defense. I'm trying to look up what they rank so far.
Well, here's the thing. Let me talk to you about this. The over-under in this game, 40.5. Some people are joking. Can we just get it to 43 so they can have an equally historic upset if they beat Ohio State? Here's the thing. It's over-under 64.5, but the line is 40.5. That, how is that possible? They'd say in like 60-10 or what, 50-10? 55-15, somewhere around there? Jeez.
I mean, one thing worth keeping in mind to kind of extend the point I was making earlier. Yes, they did lose to Oklahoma, but they allowed only 2.8 yards per carry to the Sooners. And, you know, in their, you know, nice rebound win last week against Army, they held Army to 4.4 yards per carry, which, you know, for, you know, they run a similar kind of offense to Air Force and all that. That's a pretty solid figure. So, yeah, I think, you know, if I'm UNLV, what I'm looking for is not necessarily explosive plays. I think those are probably going to be few and far between. What I'm hoping for is that they lean on Thomas and Xavier Campbell to put them in reasonable situations. You know, if they can give Armani Rogers, let's say, you know, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5 situations, I think in this particular case, there's going to be a huge difference between that and if he's forced into 3rd and long situations. I think,
but I don't know if they can, though. That's the thing. That's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously that's probably asking a lot, but, you know, if you look at Armani Rogers' numbers so far, yeah, small sample size. Actually, you know what? It's actually not even worth mentioning because he's only 2 of 10 on 3rd down so far. So let's just say he's going to have to be better if he's forced in a situation where he has to make a play with his arm, especially when it comes to moving the chains.
It'll be interesting because, like, your running game is accurate what they need to do, but Ohio State, Indiana, 0.63 yards per play allowed. And that was the first half where Indiana was in the game. He said Oklahoma 2.81 rushing the ball. I don't think the Rebels will have that much success. 3 yards a carry max. And like you said, if he's 2 and 10 on 3rd down for Rodgers, yeah, you got Devontae Boyd. You have talent, Kendall Keys. But I don't know if there'll be a chance where UNLV can be successful consistently in this game. There'll be a few plays here and there they surprise Ohio State because Army had a 99-yard drive against the Buckeyes last week. It was a 14-play, something ridiculous. But UNLV, there'll be a couple plays, but they don't have enough to beat Ohio State. You lost to Howard, yeah. You played well versus Idaho State, but this is just another step up in competition. Maybe Ohio State sleepwalks, doesn't care for part of it, but I think it's going to be like 45-10 for Ohio State. They're just going to roll.
Yeah, I mean, I see it being kind of similar to the Fresno State-Alabama game from a couple weeks ago. Because I think eventually Ohio State's going to let off the gas. You know, I think, you know, we know UNLV is going to be able to run the football, but I don't think that's necessarily going to be enough in this particular case. So I don't necessarily want to ape the same score you said. So I'm going to say 42-10.
Okay. I think there'll be a lot of points early, and yeah. I still think UNLV may have a couple of big plays here and there, but not enough. All right, ready to go back in time to Friday night?
Let's do it.
So we'll make a note to, if you want the Boise game, you'll put this up, you'll listen to the end. Or maybe I'll actually fulfill my promise and say I'll break out every game this week, but we'll see because it's late and you get what you get, right?
Exactly.
Virginia at Boise State, 13-point favorite for the Broncos at home. It's a nice early evening game. Here's the thing. It's on ESPN2. There'll be shots of this game of, oh, where's the people in the stands? You'll see other people. Oh, we're working. We're doing this. You can't have it both ways, folks. You can't have an 8:30 kickoff and complain about it being late, or kickoff in the afternoon versus Troy, or early evening versus Virginia at home and not come to your stadium. What do you want? What's the ideal to come to your stadium? Do you want Oregon to come for a 1:30 kickoff? Texas to come to town? What's it going to take?
Wasn't there weren't there some Boise fans who were mad at someone in Boise about trying to start a campaign to fill the stands for some reason? I think I missed something in that whole situation.
I'm not sure. Was somebody donating tickets or something, I think it was?
I honestly don't remember. It was just a little weird.
Yeah, I don't remember. But it's my point, not to harp too much, but you guys complain about Boise fans complain about late kicks, but then you don't show up for opening day versus a good Troy team, or nobody shows up because you're playing early evening. But here's the thing, you play Virginia, they're 2-1. Bronco Mendenhall is sort of getting better a little bit with this team. They beat William & Mary, they lost to Indiana, they beat UConn, which it's UConn, who cares?
Daniel Connolly might care.
Daniel, if you're listening, you know we kid, but still, come on, you almost lost to Holy Cross.
That's true.
Here's the thing. Virginia finally has they actually have a pretty good quarterback. And they run the ball okay. They have Ben Kurt, who only has one pick, 7 touchdowns, pretty good stuff, 2/3 completion rate, 1,000 yards just about in a couple games. That's going to be a pretty good matchup against this Boise defense, who they've already played Washington State, so it's not going to be too unfamiliar about what's going on in the passing game. Won't be as potent, but Washington State moved the ball reasonably well, and I think that's how Virginia, if they're going to win, it's because they're going to do it through the air.
Yeah, but let's not overlook how good Boise State's secondary has been so far.
Yeah, I know they got Tyler Horton and stuff. I'm just saying if they're going to, that's their strength. They're going to go to it.
I mean, I would definitely agree, because if you look at the numbers, they can't run the ball at all.
Nope.
You're talking about their leading rusher, Jordan Ellis, only has, about 4 yards to carry. And the Boise State front seven, you just mentioned Leighton Vander Esch. He's been very good so far. Tyson Maeva, if he's healthy, he's been really good so far. But, if they can shut down the running game, you've got guys back there, even beyond Tyler Horton, who are having really good years so far. I don't know that we're talking enough about DeAndre Pierce and the job that he's done opposite of Horton. Reed Harrison Ducrosse also playing really well so far. And Kakoa Nawahini, who is, a couple tackles for loss, has an interception. They have guys, young guys especially, who can do a little bit of everything. So if they can take care of the run game like I think they can, Benkert probably hasn't faced a secondary like this. And when you consider how his stats broke down, he played well against Holy Cross, and he played well against UConn, but did you see the stat line that he had against Indiana?
What was it?
So he completed about 66% or 60% of his passes, rather. But he threw the ball 66 times and only had 259 yards. Do you know what the yards per attempt on that is?
3.9. Sorry. I was thinking, it can't be that. I was thinking to myself, it can't be that low, because 60 divided by, that's it, per attempt?
3.9 yards per attempt in that game.
That's not good.
So if Boise State can take care of business like they think they can against this running attack, Bankert's been good, but I think that those numbers are a little bit deceptive. And I think that the defense is definitely good enough to take advantage of him in a way that other defenses haven't so far.
It's funny when you read, I'm just kind of going off on some stuff here, Idaho Statesman. It's always funny when you say they try to give confidence, hey, this is a good team you're playing. So when the Cavaliers have the ball, this is from Chad Kripe from the Idaho Statesman. I'll call him out on this. Tell me if you think this is an accurate statement. Virginia has a solid number one running back in Jordan Ellis, 218 yards. 3 games, might I add you. However, the way the Cavaliers operated thus far is to rely on the passing attack. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
They're 3.6 yards per carry, or 98th nationally. You cannot be a solid number one running back and be bottom quarter in the country in running the ball. It's one or the other.
Yeah. You gotta call bad, man. That's all you got to do.
I know. It's like, it's 218 yards. That's what, 70 per game? And they played William and Mary?
Yeah.
I'm just, it's like, come on, be better. It's okay to say opponent's bad. Who cares if they're from the ACC or whatever conference? They're a big-time conference.
Okay, so on the...
Doesn't matter.
So on the flip side, it may kind of lead maybe to our next question, kind of looking at the Boise State quarterback situation now. Because our lone question of the evening comes from Dayton Robeson, and he wants to know how much we think we'll see Brett Rippon this week, especially when you consider that there is a bye coming for the Broncos next week.
He's technically listed number on the depth chart, but I'm not trusting that because he was number one last week as well. So I'm thinking they're pulling a Utah State from a couple years ago and never changing it. And he has practiced this week, which is a big deal. So they haven't officially said he's had a concussion, but he's had a concussion. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about it. And I'm trying to see when he practiced this week. I'm trying to see how much he practiced, if I can find it here really quick. But I would fully expect Cozart to get the start and be the quarterback this game because, A, you're better than Virginia. And like you said, the other half is that they're on a bye next week. Why put him out there if something's going to happen to prolong him being injured? Because Rippon is your best quarterback and your best option to win. But they can win this game without putting him in. He'll be suited up, but he will not be starting. And I don't even think he'll play.
Well, I mean, if you look at what, you know, BJ Raines said about the issue earlier today, today being Wednesday, he did say that Brett Rippon has been cleared to play. And so I think that if that's the case, you know, yeah, Brian Harsin can play gamesmanship all he wants. But I think if he's 100%, he's going to play, regardless of whether there's a bye or not. Because, as you said, he is the team's best quarterback.
I must have missed. Sorry, I missed that part about him being cleared. I just knew he practiced. Mm-hmm. So if he's been cleared, okay. In that case, thank you for bringing that up because if we miss that part, like you guys are dummies, you don't know anything. However, Cozart's going to play more than I think he should play in this game. But Rippon will be in there to get going, and maybe I'll make this prediction: if they get out to a decent lead, like 17 or more points, I'm wondering if they may just let Cozart right out the game, maybe as a sort of a precautionary thing. But again, if he's cleared to play, why hold him back? But I will stand by. Cozart will get too many carries, attempts, passes in this game for my liking. It should be 100% Rippon. I don't care.
I mean, I think one other thing worth watching in this game is, you know, kind of similar, I think, to what we just talked about with regards to Virginia not having a lot of success running the football. Let's not ignore the fact that Boise State's been a little bit inconsistent in that regard, too. You know, Ryan Wolpen has the most carries on the team so far, but he's only averaging about 3 yards a carry. Madison's been okay. You know, he's at about 4.7 yards per carry, but, you know, if you look, for instance, at, you know, stuff rate, which, you know, to refresh everybody out there, it's the number of runs that's tackled at or behind the line of scrimmage. Boise State at the moment on offense is 118th in the country. And that's not a figure that you're accustomed to seeing from the Broncos. So while, you know, Virginia's defense isn't necessarily blowing everybody away, you know, you're still looking at a team that's top 40 with regards to rushing success rate on defense. You know, they haven't allowed a lot of explosive plays. Some of that might be due to the competition that they played, but that'll be something to watch. You know, they have the talent, but, you know, we've talked at length about the questions around this offensive line. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, just how much Boise challenges that narrative of this slow start that they've had running the football in the early going.
You do know the UVA has a guy named Micah Kaiser who's pretty good.
I had not noted that.
Preseason All-American. Has 5 sacks, fumble recovery, a pair of sacks in each of the past 2 games. Last year he had 134 tackles. They're going to need a running back or somebody to, maybe preferably your center or maybe tackle to knock him out of the way to open the lane up. So you got to watch out for him. And one interesting note, reading the Idaho Statesman, you might see a guy named, do you know what position Robert Mahone plays? or I don't know if it's Mahone or Mahoney. I'll go Mahone. So we'll say Robert Mahone.
Isn't he a fullback?
On
Football Study Hall, he's listed as a running back.
He's 5'10", 211, so maybe. they're speculating that maybe he could see some more carries despite having just three on the year. So they expect to see a bit more whatever action in this game for whatever reason. And Zach Hillman calls him one of the more physical backs who has good balance, can run through tackles. Maybe it is what they need because the running game has been so poor. Put him in there and see what he can do. Why not give him five to ten carries in this game? I think that's a possibility. And in particularly if this is a more of a cruising type of game for Boise State. So what's your game prediction?
I think it's going to be an interesting game. But ultimately, I think Boise State's defense, kind of like it was against Troy, is going to be the difference in this game because I do expect them to shut down Virginia's running game. And, you know, I do expect them to win the turnover battle. And in that, I think that Ben Kurt's probably going to throw a couple of interceptions, which sets the offense up really nicely. So I see it, you know, let's say like a 13-point victory. I'm going to say Boise State 30, Virginia 17.
All right, so really quick, FPI gives Boise State an 80% chance to win this game. And also really quick, you know how we talked last week about Boston College and some roundabout way of Wake Forest versus Utah State? So really quick, UVA, they're only favored in one game the rest of the way, and that's against Boston College. Just saying, folks.
Okay, all right.
Hey, so I stand by my statement. Who cares if you beat Boston College? I'm going Utah. I think, or not Utah, sorry. I've got Aggies on the brain. Boise State is going to win. I will go 30-10.
All right.
Anything else we need to add this week at all? Any other tidbits since we're wrapping up the show here? We're about an hour. So we, not 90 minutes, but we did go longer than an hour.
I think we're pretty much all set.
All right, so check out our stuff. We have bowl projections. We have previews coming up. We have quarterback rankings done by myself. So if you don't like them, don't yell at Matt on Twitter. Don't yell at our basketball guy, Eli. Yell at me on Twitter, Jeremy Moss. But check us out, mwcwire.com, Facebook, Twitter, search all that fun stuff. Hey, subscribe to our show. If you retweet our show, we will give you a shout-out on the podcast, which is worth podcast gold. Should we give out five podcast dollars if you retweet our show?
That's social capital, people.
Podcast dollars actually equals $0, so sorry. I was going to say some quick disclaimer, but whatever. We'll give you a shout out. Share the show. We want people to listen to the show, whether we sound great or terrible, or if you hate us or love us. Just share the show and give us your thought. Or, you know what it is, Matt. 5 stars, right?
Yeah, even if you shut the podcast off right now, go share the show. Give us 5 stars.
Just let us know. And I'll do my best to share each individual one, but for each, not individual one, but individual preview. We'll see how that goes tonight. But that's it. We got Mountain West action. We have conference play going on. And that's all we got for tonight. I was going to ramble on, but before I get too crazy and start saying nonsense, that is our show, and as always, yes, we're biased against your team.